On today's And Is For Networking episode, we take on the following questions from college student Doug, who has given us other questions too for other episodes already. Doug has been here before. What tools or methods do you use for packet analysis, and what do you look for? I'm Ethan Banks, along with Holly Metlitsky. I've been doing networking for decades, and Holly is pretty new to the industry, but learning ridiculously fast. And together, we deconstruct the jargon and big ideas of networking. And if you'd like to connect with us, we are on LinkedIn. So let's review Doug's question once more. He asks, what tools or methods do you use for packet analysis, and what do you look for? Okay, so Holly, I think we should start at the very beginning here. And I don't know how much experience you have with this, but I'll ask you anyway and see what you think. What is packet analysis?
So packet analysis is really just a method that you use to monitor or examine data packets when they're traveling across your network. My experience with it, a little bit. I've really just touched the surface. So I'm excited to get going on this episode and learn some things as well.
All right. Well, you've touched the surface of it. Does that mean you've worked with something like Wireshark, something like that, or?
Yeah. So, I mean, when I say work with Wireshark, I have Wireshark and I've looked at packets. Whether I can analyze them is a whole different story.
Okay. Well, we've mentioned Wireshark. So I think the next thing to address for Doug here are some tools that you can use to perform packet capture. And there's several of them that there's a couple of them that are free that a lot of people use, Wireshark being the first one. So if you're looking for a free tool that is absolutely excellent and has been in development for, close to 3 decades now, Wireshark is the tool. Back in the day, Wireshark was called Etherreel, if I remember right. And then it changed names for some reason, but it's an open source project that's been used. It was developed out of need because all of us that were networking, we didn't really have a tool except for commercial tools that were super spendy. So there was a company called Network General that made a product called the Sniffer. And it was this dedicated, box. It was portable, but it was like this, not portable like a laptop today. It was like this huge lunchbox sized monster that with specialized hardware in it that could do packet sniffing for you. And they're really spendy. And so a lot of times you didn't buy one, you would actually go to a consultancy. And so you guys got a sniffer, you guys got someone certified and, Network General Sniffer on staff and the hardware, can you come on? Cause we got a problem, we can't figure it out. Nowadays, it's like anybody with a laptop can put Wireshark on and you can sniff packets all day. So just curious, Holly, you've been able to get Wireshark going and capture packets, but you don't know about analyzing packets. When you were looking at Wireshark, was it all a bit much? What was your impression of it?
My initial glance at it was, I have no idea what's going on here. It's a bunch of words, timestamps, bits and bytes all over the place. I couldn't make head or tail of it. But I was fortunate enough to actually watch somebody else analyze a packet in a troubleshooting situation. And then suddenly it all started coming together slowly.
Yeah. And what Wireshark really is, I would describe it as a packet decoder primarily, where it can look at the packets on the wire and know, this is a TCP packet that is headed towards a web server and I see HTTP things going on in there. Okay, this is HTTP traffic, or this is ICMP traffic. It's a ping that's being sent out. It's an echo request and I'm getting an echo reply back. It knows how to actually look at the packets, how they're formatted on the wire, and decode them in a way that it can display them to you in the software and break them down. Right down to every bit and byte in that packet, it can break it down and show you exactly what's going on. I mean, if you want to see like a raw hex code dump of everything that's going on in that packet, you could look at it that way. You mostly don't want to. You mostly want Wireshark to decode it for you.
It gives it to you like in the bottom right. I think it gives you what the hex desk combination looks like.
It exactly does. Yeah, it exactly does that.
Letters and numbers.
If you're troubleshooting at that level, you're really digging in hard to figure out a very specific problem because part of that hex dump is a decoding of everything that was on the wire in that packet. And so it could be, I need to know what value was in this bit in this part of the header. And it matters to you because you're debugging at that level. That's very rare. I don't think I've ever done that, ever. But I know you could. If I was a developer writing protocols, maybe I'd need to do something like that. I don't know. Pretty rare that you need to go in that deep. But Wireshark, again, is your, that's your, going to be your go-to for most of you that are out there listening. It's got a great user interface that most people get very familiar with very quickly. It's broken into thirds, how it's all broken out. You've got your packet list at the top. You've got your packet and frame decode in the middle. And then at the bottom, you got your hex dump. And I'm going from memory, so hopefully I got that about right. I think that's about right.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking at one. So looks about rock to me.
Okay, good, good, good. Okay. And we'll leave Wireshark there because we got other things that we need to talk about, including a couple of other tools. One of those is TCP dump. So Wireshark's a GUI. It's a nice graphical user interface that works on Windows, works on Linux, works on Apple. TCP dump is command line, but it does a very similar kind of thing. You can say TCP dump, and you have to put the syntax in correctly and tell it what interface you want to monitor and what level of decoding you want it to do for you. You can have it be normal or verbose or very verbose. There's a VV setting, as I recall. And you can get a packet dump at the command line if you need to be looking at packets that way. Both Wireshark and TCP dump will save or read PCAP files. What's a PCAP file, Holly? Have you run into this?
Yeah, the packet capture file.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's all it is. It's a PCAP file. It's a standard format that most packet analyzers or packet sniffers, they're also called, can read. So Wireshark will do that for you. TCP dump will do that for you. Be able to save to or read a packet capture file. Now, there are a ton of commercial tools in this space as well, Holly. And rather than walk through what all the tools are, because there's so many, I thought I'd just summarize for us why you might want a commercial tool that's not just Wireshark. I will say a lot of these are spendy, dedicated appliances. It's a serious thing you got to budget some money to, because they got serious hardware in there to do what they do. And the reason you need serious hardware is because capturing packets at wire speed and writing to disk without falling behind with new packets coming in is a hard thing. You need a serious piece of gear to be able to do that. Because, I mean, Holly, the most common interfaces you're dealing with in the data center now are what speeds?
Gosh, I mean, you're looking 400 gig plus.
Yep, you're dealing 400, now 800 gig is out.
Yeah,
100 gig is certainly soon. Really common now. And so how do you, if that pipe, let's say it's a 400 gig pipe is full of data, and you are trying to capture that traffic and save it to disk being usually the slower part of that equation, how do you do it? And so there's a lot of specialized devices out there that... that if you need that, then you're gonna have to pay for a device that can do that, because your laptop will keep up as long as the pipe's not full. Your laptop can keep up for quite a ways, but it's not gonna do. Even if there was such a thing as a 400 gigabit per second interface for your laptop, there isn't, as far as I can think of.
No.
you'd have quite the machine to be able to pull it off. Anyway. Another thing that these dedicated commercial appliances do, they're going to do some packet analysis for you, as does Wireshark actually. Wireshark can do things like show me the conversation and build me a ladder, the ladder diagrams that show you the back and forth between each side of the ladder, each point, part of the conversation being a rung in that ladder. It'll do things like that for you. And then lots of other analysis as well that Wireshark can do for you. But these commercial appliances do a lot of that kind of stuff too, for sure. They're quite competent at it. But they also give you packet history. So if you're like, I need to know what happened last night at 1 a.m. when the network went down, what happened? You might need history. You can go back and get it. You can share packet captures collaboratively with these systems. So that's kind of a big deal. Hey, Holly, can you look at this packet capture for me? I was just looking at it. I can't figure it out. Will you take a look and see if you can spot something I'm missing? You can share that. It's on the server. And you go and go check it out. And then another useful thing for a dedicated commercial appliance, maybe you want one device that you've got dedicated lines that plug it into different segments of the network so that you can do a packet capture on, this is in my DMZ hanging off of my firewall. This is in my core network. This is in the accounting financial segment, and you run dedicated links all over that to that. And you've got this server that's got a whole bunch of network interfaces. And it's like, think of it as legs of a spider just going all over the network because you've got different things where you might need to capture traffic and do analysis at any point. So, and again, tons of these tools out there. Some of them come from vendors you've heard of. Some of them are like, this is all the company does. They make like awesome packet capture devices and that do analysis, packet sniffers. And so, well, Holly, I just monologued for a while, so we got to get you back in the conversation here. Sorry.
I'm listening and learning. It's like I said, not something that is in my wheelhouse of expertise. So,
well, here's another question for you then. I know you're new to this stuff, but how do you actually capture traffic on a network switch? I want to see, like, you've got port one, it's plugged into something. I want to see the traffic that's on port one. How do I do it?
So if I'm correct, I would think, you know, you would use a certain type of device, maybe like something like a switched port analyzer, like you mirror ports, you know, something like that.
Okay. So let's dig into what this is. You're right. If you pulled that from somewhere, she pulled it from our notes. We're looking at them together right now. It's a little secret behind the scenes. So a switch port analyzer port on a switch, or also known as a mirror port, Holly. This is, hey, port 24 on the switch that's not being used for anything, I'm going to plug my laptop in with Wireshark into it, and I'm going to configure the switch to mirror traffic that's on port one, which has got that thing in it that I really want to see the traffic from. And we're going to mirror a copy of it over to port 24, where I just plugged Wireshark into. And that's called a span port in Cisco language. I don't know if all vendors call it a span port, but span as in switch port analyzer, or commonly called a mirror port. I'm going to mirror traffic from one port to another port, and I'm going to look at the traffic that's been copied or mirrored over and watch it in my switch port analyzer. So that's the most common way. And you'll see span. There's also something called RSpan, remote span. You can actually copy traffic out of the switch to a different destination. And then there's something called ERSpan, encapsulated remote span, where you can actually have that span traffic go through routed segments, if I remember. It's been a long time since I've configured an ER span, but in other words, there's a bunch of ways to copy traffic, either from one port in a switch to another port in a switch, or to a different switch altogether, you know, somewhere else in your network. There's all these tools. And there's also things like an inline network tap. So this is common with fiber, Holly. So, I mean, if you imagine with fiber, it's like, well, how do I tap into that thing? Well, you can, there's a network tap will have, you stick it in the middle of a fiber link that you want to capture the traffic from. It's got a port that goes in and a port that goes out, and then a port off to the side. And you can plug your packet sniffer in off to the side. And then now you're getting a copy of everything. You've tapped into the network, if you will. So like maple syrup up here in New England, they tap all the trees and they hit a common, I don't know that that's a perfect analogy. Anyway, it's just, I like maple Makes syrup. Sense. What can I say? And so going back for Doug here, he asked about methods, like what are your methods? Well, you need a span port, you need a mirror port. That's going to be the most common thing. If you're fancy, you're using an inline network tap. So that's how you're going to get traffic from wherever it is to into your Wireshark on your laptop. All right, well, what's the next problem, Holly? Like, if you just plug Wireshark in, even if you're not on a span port, you just like listen to the network. What happens as soon as you turn Wireshark on and start capturing?
You're gonna get absolutely everything coming through.
That's right.
And that's a lot.
You're gonna get bombed. My home network, okay? My home network, which is I got a lot of IoT stuff in the house because I like automation a little bit. So I got a lot of lights and plugs and things that are lit up. I've got, you know, like everybody, a smart TV and laptops and iPads and all that kind of stuff. If I turn Wireshark on right now, just on the wireless network to listen to traffic, that is, it's absolute madness. It is absolutely crazy how much talking is going on just my home network amongst all these devices here. Things announcing themselves, broadcasting, hey, I'm here and I got this service to offer. I'm a printer and I do this, and on and on and on. It's an endless racket. So the next question, Holly, is then if I want to, that's too much information in Wireshark for me to handle. How do I deal with that?
Well, now you need to, like anything else, filter it down to try and find what you're actually looking for, if you know kind of what you're filtering on, hopefully.
And in Wireshark, at least last I knew, it's been a bit since I've looked at this, but there's two kinds of filters. There's a display filter where you've captured 100,000 packets, and now you want to filter through those 100,000 packets. Show me only the HTTP packets. Show me only, you know, whatever it is you're looking for, the ICMP packets. You can write filters on that. Show me only the conversation between this IP address and this IP address. There's all kinds of filters like that, a display filter that you can write. But there are also capture filters. So if the display filter filters everything you captured and just strips out, you know, now, okay, here's 1,000 packets I can start working through as opposed to 100,000. A capture filter is going to filter off what is actually captured by Wireshark. Wireshark will ignore things that don't match the filter. And the if as long as you match the filter, then it'll send it into your display. And you could filter further from there if you wanted. But you could write a capture filter as well that keeps the number of packets Wireshark is capturing down to something more reasonable, which is a pretty common technique in something called visibility fabrics. I don't know if you've run into this one, Holly, but and I know I didn't put it in the notes because it just popped in my head now. But visibility fabrics are exotic switches that can look at traffic coming in from your network and then route it to a specific tool for analysis. Like maybe you care about intrusion detection and prevention, and so you want to route traffic to your IDS IPS box. You could take traffic coming into the network, filter it inside this quote-unquote visibility box, and then route it over to the IDS IPS, or certain traffic for that you want to capture because you had a routing up-down event. Your OSPF neighbor adjacency fell over, which triggered a log entry, and that triggered an automation that says, I want to capture traffic from somewhere now, or something like that. You can control with in that visibility fabric device and write exotic filters that filter stuff before it ever even gets to Wireshark. So I went hard on filters. Okay, I should stop now. Now, when you got opened up Wireshark, Holly, and you started looking at the packets and things that were in there, were you looking for anything specific or just trying to kind of get your head around Wireshark?
Initially, just trying to understand, you know, like what a packet looks like, what a normal packet looks like, so that perhaps one day if I come across something that looks different, you know, what is the difference between those two? And just trying to understand, you know, what's coming through, what's the information. And what can I get out of it, really?
Yeah, and everybody that's listening should do exactly that, because Wireshark costs you nothing. So do that.
Yeah.
Actually, download Wireshark, get it working with your laptop, and run a capture. And then, you know, it'll take just a few seconds and you'll have hundreds or thousands of packets. Start browsing through the list. See what's in there. What is the normal baseline of traffic you see on your network? What does a packet look like? Just pick one, anyone, doesn't matter. And then look at it in the decoder in the middle window and go, oh, this is the Ethernet part. This is the IP part. It breaks it all down for you, Wireshark does. It decodes it in a way. It's like, oh, this part is this part. And this is the Ethernet frame header part. And this is the IP packet header part. And every field in there is broken down for you. And it tells you like, this is a TCP packet with the ACK flag set, you know, for example.
Yeah.
And that may mean nothing to you now, but as you learn more and more, those things will become more and more meaningful. And another way to put it is it organizes a packet for you.
Yeah.
Makes it more sane. So what we're trying to answer Doug's question here is, what do you look for? So I think what Doug's really getting at is like a troubleshooting kind of exercise. So step one, what Holly and I were just talking about, open up Wireshark and just start playing with it. See what you can make sense of. But I'll talk from my experience, Holly, using Wireshark in anger, as I would say, I'm trying to fix, something's broke. I'm trying to figure out something, because if something broke and we need help figuring it out. If I'm in Wireshark trying to troubleshoot a problem, it's because everything else failed me. I couldn't figure it out any other way. It's like, for me, it's a last resort. Some people love packet analysis and it's their go-to, but for me, it's like, usually you can solve it at a higher level. If I got to solve it, looking at the packets, it's like, okay, something's badly, broken here, and are so obscure, so hard to get our heads around it's my last resort tool. Nothing wrong with it. Some people love it. It's their go-to. Not for me. I would rather look at logs. I would rather look at other more obvious indicators of what the problem might be. Mm. And so where I've often ended up having to use a packet sniffer, Wireshark, to solve a problem is because someone comes to me with a network is slow complaint. That happens. The network is slow.
Yep.
Or that's their perception, is the network is slow. It's like, okay. Now you could... You could look at that adversarially and go like, it's not the network, and just be like angry about it. I got over that after a while. It's like, okay, they think the network's slow. Maybe the network's slow. I don't know. Let's figure it out. Let's see what's going on. And if I didn't have any indication on my network management system that there was something slow, I didn't have any other complaints or other problems, I'd be like, well, it's probably not the network, but let's look and see what we can figure out. Well, okay, you say the network is slow. What are you experiencing? Well, when I use this application, I go in the browser and I do this and I click this, and it just takes forever for it to get an answer back. It's like 3 seconds. Like, okay, that is slow. All right, let's see what we can figure out. And so you end up, or I would end up, narrowing down the scope of the problem. It's you using this application from your desk in the office to a server that is in the cloud or wherever it is. It's downstairs in the data center. It's across the WAN somewhere. Okay. Now, what is the packet capture going to bring me trying to figure out where the slowness is and actually monitoring a conversation between the client and the server and seeing what the timelines are? Did the packet going from the client make it to the server in a timely fashion, whatever a timely fashion is, should be, milliseconds or, depending, maybe it's tenths of a second, whatever. You got to figure out what normal is and go from there.
I actually have a question there. So, I've decided before this episode, I know we're doing packet capture. So I found myself a packet, downloaded it off of a platform. So I know what the issue is. But you're talking about, like, did the packet arrive at the destination? So I'm looking at Wireshark and one of the screens says like arrival time. Can I assume, based on the fact that there's an arrival time, that packet made it to its destination? Or would you recommend digging a little further to go through, each part of the analysis to make sure that arrival time, like, what does that refer to?
If it's a TCP, if it's a TCP connection and it's getting an ACK back, mm-hmm. an acknowledgement back, it should be knowing all of those things. Yes. And you can count on that if it's telling you that. But what you'd be looking for if you were doing it, you want the tool to tell you as much as possible without you having to dig through. Cause other than that, it's a manual process. You're looking at, you're doing multiple captures. You're going, okay, I sent it here because I have a sniffer here on the client end, and I've got another sniffer plugged in, or at least I've got another port plugged in on the server end, and I can see the transit time because I saw the packet leave on the one sniffer and I saw the packet arrive on the other sniffer. What's the time differential? And then you're assuming you've got good. Also a case for NTP. You need to be very sure that you've got time synchronized everywhere and your timestamps are correct. But you'd be looking for slow performance. If you've got a system telling you, because it's smart enough to do the decodes and the analysis to be able to tell you, oh, arrival time should have been X, then yes, you should be able to count on that. Another thing to be thinking about when you're troubleshooting these things is that the transaction that you're measuring is more complicated than your web browser going to a web server, because the web server has other systems it interacts with to be able to return the page to you that you've requested. So you say, hey, web server, give me this page or whatever the resource is that you're looking for, a page most commonly, right? And to make that page, it could be that the web server needs to talk to a database to retrieve the contents of that page, perhaps, or to do a query to build the page dynamically and then serve it up to you. And so it could be that the database server that contains all that information that builds each web page is slow and has a problem. And this is a kind of a problem that I've run into before, where you have to diagnose each member of the stack along the way. I worked in an environment where to get to the data you actually needed to get to, you had to come in from the internet, make it through an edge router and an access list, make it through a firewall, then make it through a reverse proxy server, then make it through a second firewall. Then you would hit a load balancer, and then you would hit a pool member with a web server on it that would then hit another load balancer that would then hit a database server on the back end behind it. That was the chain of devices that the transaction had to flow through and then be returned back through that entire application stack. And there's a lot of applications that can be complicated like that. You know, in a modern environment, you've got microservices scattered across a Kubernetes cluster, living in the cloud maybe. And so there's all these devices that you might have to go through, a variety of cloud constructs. You've got to hit a load balancer and a VPC, and there's access list rules along the way. And there's a million ways you could have configured your networking up in the cloud that complicate all of this to figure out this stuff. And there are packet sniffers dedicated to helping you troubleshoot what's going on in the cloud, for example. So where the packet sniffers help you then is just, are packets making it at all? If they're making it, are they making it in a timely fashion? I'm looking for that. If they're not making it in a timely fashion, can you figure out where in the chain of devices the traffic flows through where things are getting slow? So that's a lot of stuff, but things that have helped me kind of pin down exactly where a problem might be. Another thing I'll look for are retransmissions. So TCP is still very commonly used on the internet. Am I seeing a lot of retransmissions? And if you look at a Wireshark conversation, it's going to flag your retransmissions. Oh, this segment was sent, or this packet was sent, and I had to send it again. And it will observe that the sender had to send it again, that there was a retransmission there.
Yeah, I've got a wireless packet, so it's not quite TCP, but I mean, I can see immediately that there's request response for TLS, EAP over and over again, back and forth. I'm like, this is not how it's meant to go. And then obviously eventually it fails. Like, without even seeing the failure, just seeing that retransmission go on and on, you know something's going wrong.
Yes, I'm not fresh on my wireless stuff, but EAP is extended authentication protocol, I remember. And it's you know, if it's TLS EAP, it's an encrypted authentication, like a client that should be authenticating to the access point, if I remember right. And so, right, if there's a lot of retransmissions there, something's going on. Something's going on. And it would be interesting to figure out what it is. And it could be something that flows through to user experience or not. So that's another thing that can throw you about a lot of these packet caps. You'll see a lot of stuff like, man, that looks terrible. But there's no user impact because, there's a lot of retransmissions, but they happen so fast and finally it all went through and it worked, that it's okay, you know, anyway.
Yeah.
So there's other scenarios that that we could get into, but these are the kind of things that I look for, because the scenario most often where I pull out the packet sniffer is the network is slow. So what I'm trying to do is map that user experience of slowness to something I'm seeing in a packet trace and go, okay, the slowness they're experiencing happened where? And in one case, I was able to go back to someone and go, Okay, by the time it got to the database server sitting behind the web server, the database server got it, sat on it for like a half a second before it finally sent a response back to the web server so that the web server could then do its thing. And that's why it's slow, because the database server is just sitting there grinding away. And in that particular case, he was like, it took that long? I'm like, yeah, it was pretty slow. He's like, huh. And we phoned up the database administrator, who took a look at the server. He's like, holy crap, there's a disk failing in the drive array in this server. And the whole thing is just, the poor thing was just crunching itself to death, trying to, it was a drive array where you could lose a drive and still keep going, but it was a RAID array where you can do math to figure out, oh, that dead drive, using math, I can figure out what should have been on that drive that's dead, but it really slows things down a lot when it has to do that. So you're going, you're just going slow. It's like dragging an anchor behind the car. And he's like, oh, wow, okay, let's get a new drive in there and get that array rebuilt. And then the problem went away later on. There's stuff like that happens all the time. I just encourage everyone that's listening, if you're a network person and it always feels adversarial, why is the network slow? What did you guys change on the network? Just be chill and go like, we didn't change anything, but let's figure it out. I'm not sure what the problem is, but let's dig into it together and see what we can make the person who comes to you with the request your friend. You're not your adversary, not your enemy, but turn him into your buddy and go, I don't think we changed anything, but honestly, I'm not sure what the problem is, but we can figure it out. We got the tools. Let's dig into it and see what we can figure out.
That's a tough ask when the network gets blamed for everything, you know? Yeah. So you're doing a huge upgrade on your laptop, but it's the network that's the problem, but your CPU is totally full and your laptop's overheating. But no, network's the problem. So
yeah, it's a thing that takes time too, because you need to build trust with the person so that they know you're not just going to throw the football back over the wall to them and go, yeah, not my problem, your problem. You jerk. But you make it that, hey, we're on the same team. We work for the same company. We work in the same IT group. Let's work together and figure this out and make them your friend. Then it's a good thing. Okay. Some closing thoughts here on if you're interested in packet analysis and getting into it more. We mentioned Wireshark. There is a conference for Wireshark called SharkFest that happens at least annually, I think usually on the East Coast of the U.S., if you really love packet analysis and want to get some hands-on education and training, SharkFest is for you. It's not a free thing by any means, but check it out. There is a person called Laura Chappelle, Chappell. I don't know how I pronounce Laura's last name, honestly. Laura Chappell, Chappell. She has a site called Chappell University. Wireshark training, that is her thing. And she has blog posts that are for free that you can subscribe to her blog, and she'll teach you tips and tricks about Wireshark. She's awesome. And of course, if you do want to take advantage of her training, she's got a bunch of courses available. And then Packet Pushers, packetpushers.net. That's the network that you are listening to right now to hear Anna's for networking. Packetpushers.net has lots of free content about Wireshark. Just do a search for Wireshark and see what comes up. There's tons of articles that have popped up, podcasts that we've recorded way back in the catalog. We even recorded a show with Gerald Combs, who was one of the original creators of Wireshark. And we chatted with him. That goes back a decade or more. It's still a great conversation. One of the most popular shows we ever recorded. Well, okay, Holly, we've another not short episode, and so whatever. I guess we'll
figure it out.
we will figure it out. And to you out there listening, we hope you enjoy the episode. Thank you for listening to Anna's for Networking. And if you have another question that Holly and I can answer for you, would you send it to us, packetpushers.net/follow-up, and we will add your question to our topic list. You can check out all the other podcasts from Packet Pushers by searching for Packet Pushers anywhere you get your podcasts. We've got a dozen shows covering networking, security, wireless, DevOps, and leadership, and it's all free for you. Subscribe to what appeals to you and let other people know that Packet Pushers exist. We'd really appreciate that. I have been Ethan Banks, along with Holly Metlitsky. You can find us on LinkedIn or the Packet Pushers community Slack group. And just remember, networking isn't hard. Other people figured it out, so you can too.